Hey everyone, welcome to the Others podcast. I am your host, Steve Penny. Joining me this week, the Hispanic Justin Timberlake is with me.
What?
If only you could see what I see.
Jesus Christ, man.
I said Hispanic, I should say Latino, shouldn't I? It's different.
Thank you.
I apologize. No offense meant. I apologize.
Yes. You put me on the spot and call me Hispanic.
I'm sorry.
So wrong, man.
As always, Rafa is here. Rafa is sporting a glorious head of hair in his trademark blonde style, but it's getting a little bit long and it is getting, you know, early 2000s Justin Timberlake-esque, let's say.
Thank you for that, man. Love it. Love the comparison.
I've got to say, you were the one that said it to me before we started recording, so I had to say it.
Yeah. Well, people started to say it's crazy because people in Brazil have different comparisons. You know, like we have like Brazilians characters that a lot of Brazilians were saying that I was looking like, and some of our friends from here, from Spain. They were the ones that saying that I look like Justin Timberlake. I don't look at all, not even my hair. It's just one thing that they know I will appreciate because I'm a huge fan. So
you do a little bit that when he had it, you know, dyed himself in the early 90s, and yours looks a little bit better, I have to say. His was when he had that, like, it was almost like noodles. It was like that short wavy sort of style. Yeah. which didn't look good on him.
Yeah. So you assume it doesn't look good on me also, but
yeah, well, yours is a bit different. It looks better. We'll give you that.
Oh, thank you so much, man. I give you after you put me on the spot, so it's a good thing to say. Thank you.
I meant it in a nice way, of course.
Yeah.
All right. So let's mention quickly, you are back from your last trip as well.
Yeah, man. We went to Zurich for 4 days. It was pretty interesting. Pretty interesting city. Yeah, nothing pretty special about it. It's just a normal city with a lot of things to buy. Like, it's a pretty capitalistic city, if I can say that. But it was cool. Everybody's cool there. Everybody's so nice and have pretty high education. I was pretty amused about that. And yeah, and a lot of Brazilians. So that was pretty interesting also. Yeah. I mean, Brazilians are everywhere. We are like grass. But it was really like on the first day, like in the first hour, we were starting to hear people speaking Portuguese. I was like, oh, wow, we are here. And the event, like the sneaker event, it was awesome. We sold a lot of paper. So that was good for me, not for the environment. And yeah, everything was cool, man. Love it.
Nice. Sounds good. When is the next trip planned, if there is one?
Yeah, the only one that is really planned, that we bought the tickets and bought the flight tickets, is for Budapest in November.
Okay, a little way off yet then.
Yeah. But we're probably going to be at Italy on October and also Athens in October. Let's see.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So if you've missed Rafa at the start of the year, you can definitely catch him somewhere in Europe later in the year for sure.
Yeah, hit me up.
All right, let's get into our track this week. We seem to just be covering all the old ones over the last few weeks, but this is an old one that is a classic that we still haven't got to. And it is from the year 2000. It is, I haven't changed the title from the notes of last week's. So I was about to say, it's Nothing by Noriega. No, it's not. It's Jay-Z's I Just Want to Love You. Open brackets, give it to me, close brackets.
Yeah, man, such a classic.
Now, I think we said on the last one, on the episode about Nothing, that was a classic Pharrell hook. I don't think they get more classic than this one, do they?
No. I think that one is the, I don't know, it feels like it was where all began. I mean, we have like tracks before that, but I think that one is like the DNA. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. Like, we Neptunes fans, we had this discussion before, like, what was the track that put the Neptunes on the map? And people occasionally say it was Supertug, but I think Supertug was more local, like it was more in the US. And when I Just Wanna Love It by Jay-Z was like more global. I remember that track. I don't remember Supertug like back in the day. Like I think I heard Supertug in 2001, 2002, but I Just Wanna Love It was everywhere. So yeah.
This was a club hit the world over for sure.
Yeah.
And like I say, as soon as you hear that line, I'm a hustler, baby.
Wow.
Everyone just knows. Everyone knows the next line and the rest of it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Let's do some quick numbers and facts. So it was the lead single from Jay's fifth studio album, The Dynasty, Rock La Familia. It was, surprisingly, his first single to reach number one on the hip-hop and R&B chart.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
Yeah, it made it to number 11, I think, on the Hot 100, which is like the main chart.
No.
So prior to this, you know, his four other albums, he hadn't had a number one, not even on the hip-hop and R&B chart. What I also found quite surprising was Complex voted it in first place for its Song of the Decade.
Wow.
Now, it's a classic song, you know, I'll give it that, but Song of the Decade is maybe a little bit too much of a big shout.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't know what decade they were measuring. I should check the notes, whether they're measuring from 2000 to 2010 or prior to that with some other sort of different year. But yeah, they obviously rate it highly. As I just mentioned, it came out in 2000. It came out on the 17th of October. Video directed by Dave Myers, who I think we've mentioned many times on this podcast previously. He's done a few videos with Jay-Z and about a million with Missy Elliott and many, many other people. And it currently has a respectable 36.5 million views on YouTube. I have no idea how many streams it has, but I imagine probably quite a lot. So I imagine this is one of those songs that's just in every rap, hip-hop, party type playlist that you find anywhere across Apple Music or Spotify or any of those platforms.
Yeah, 100%.
So I did, as I was doing some digging, I found out some facts that I wasn't previously aware of, including that this song is actually based on the concept of the video and the song is, you know, loosely based on a true story and events that occurred earlier that year, in the year 2000, at a birthday party for Kimora Lee Simmons. That's the ex-wife of Russell Simmons, who used to run Def Jam. There weren't too many more details. I think there's an interview, Jay saying, you know, he was at this house party, and I think he said Mary J. Blige was there dancing and various other people. But if this is the concept of that event, based on that event, then it must have been one hell of a party that they attended that day or that night.
Yeah, exactly, because it's pretty eventful. A lot of things going on.
For sure. And I think, yeah, in terms of the concept of the video, it is fairly fairly simplistic and fairly straightforward. It's obviously, weirdly, a daytime house party. I guess some people have those.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Jay finds a young lady that, let's say, he wants to spend some quality time with. And he's moving from room to room throughout the house, trying to find some private space. And every time he goes to a room, there happens to be other people also enjoying some quality time with other people they've met at the party, let's say. Yeah. including a Jermaine Dupri hiding in a closet.
Yeah, I mean, we can hide Jermaine Dupri everywhere in
He
a
said
drawer.
small.
If he's a pretty small guy.
It could have been Diddy hiding in a closet, but you know, that's another story.
He was filming it, everything.
Anyway, let's not talk about stuff like that. What I did read was another interview with Jay saying they already had the chorus, they had the hook, or Emilio Sparks had it and obviously been working on it, and they were trying to find the right beat for it to go with. They found, you know, they obviously got that one from the Neptunes, and instantly with him recording it, they put this as the first single, and it, you know, obviously wasn't planned to be the first single. I can't remember what the first single from the album was meant to be. Maybe it was Parking Lot Pimpin', I want to say, something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
And they scrapped that and immediately put this one as the first single.
Yeah, the video was filmed like after like a couple of days, right? After the song was produced.
Yeah, so they recorded the song, then yeah, sort of 4 days later, they were like, right, we need a video.
4 days. Wow.
Yeah. And then the video was shot over the course of 3 or 4 days as well. So within a week, they'd got a beat, done a song, recorded a video, and said, yeah, this is going to be the lead single from the album.
Wow, man.
They obviously knew straight away when they heard that beat and they heard the chorus, the hook with it. They knew what a hit it was going to be.
Yes, man. That must be amazing. Just to feel that the song is amazing, and it is. And it actually was the first number one on the hip hop R&B charts, you said.
Yeah.
Wow, the first number one that Jay-Z had. So, wow. Imagine the energy on the studio.
Yeah, it must have been amazing because they obviously have that feeling and know sort of straight away.
Yeah.
But there's always like a lot of tracks that, you know, artists kind of put out as singles and sometimes lead singles, and they really think they're going to do well. And for whatever reason, they don't sometimes. They're just not the right song at the right time. But to just know instantly and have it all locked down within a week and have the album changed as well. Because, you know, changing an album is probably a big process in itself. Adding this into the album, scrapping what was originally going to be your first single, you know, you have to get sign off on stuff like that from your label and other people involved.
Yeah.
So to kind of turn it around quite quickly, get it on there, and then put it out to the world, and knowing it's going to be massive and it turning into something massive, yeah. I don't think that feeling probably gets much better as an artist or, you know, as a musician.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I saw an interview with Pharrell, like he was saying, like Jay-Z called him and said, man, I want a track and I want something like Shake Your Ass. So Jay, like, really knew what he wanted, and he got the same feeling, right? It's not you don't think straight away that it's the same vibe, but when you like get to know that is the same producers and everything, like in kind of the same inspiration also, right? Because it's also kind of funky beat, same feeling, like sexy, funky, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was awesome.
The video itself, again, I think with a lot of these early 2000s videos that we've previously talked about, very much of its time in terms of how it's shot, the contents of it, the fashion that's involved. It, of course, has many cameos in it. Little Kim turns up a few times. Little C's. Damon Dash, of course, he has to obviously be in every video.
Yeah, of course.
Beanie Siegel, Memphis Bleek. Yeah. Jermaine Dupri, as we mentioned. And then again, very much of its time, as we talked about with the last video, which actually came a year later, we have John Witherspoon from, yeah, famously from Friday, but obviously many, many other films, with some, again, some little skits and little bits, yeah, dropped in at the start of the video and sort of halfway through as well.
Yeah.
Again, it doesn't necessarily add anything to the video. Like I say, very much of its time adding these things in. Obviously, you know, famous actor.
Yeah, exactly.
When did Friday come out? Late 90s?
Late 90s? I thought it was 93.
Late 90s? Was it? Oh, God. It might well have been. I don't know.
Yeah.
Terrible with dates. But obviously, yeah, John Witherspoon is, you know, done many things other than Friday. So obviously,
rest in peace.
To appear in this video. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mainly know him more from this cartoon TV series. It was called The Boondocks. So he was voicing the grandpa, aka Robert Freeman, and it's pretty classic, man. Like, I love that series. Like, I watched like a gazillion times. And Joel Witherspoon, man, he killed it. He's awesome. I mean, everybody's awesome, like the voices on that series, but he is one of the greats. Yeah, rest in peace.
Yeah, I'm just trying to look up to see like what else he was in around that time. Okay, Friday was 1995.
Okay, nice. I was not there.
Okay, so he would have just been in Next Friday, I guess, because that came out in earlier in 2000. So riding high off of the back of that average sequel. And then, of course, yeah, Friday After Next, as we talked about in the last show as well, in 2002. But yes, an acting and comedy legend for sure. So yes, he makes a couple of little appearances in the video itself.
Yeah.
What else have we got? We've got Rick James sample in there from Give It To Me Baby in the hook. Also in the first verse from Biggie's The World Is... Is it The World Is... No, I was about to say The World Is Mine. That's not a Biggie song, is it? The World Is... The World... what's the word I'm looking for? I'm going to have to click the link. The World Is Filled.
Oh, okay.
And also an interpolation of Carl Thomas's I Wish as well, if I remember rightly.
Oh, and I saw somewhere that Shay for NERD, like, he's on credit, but he also helped maybe with some background vocals. I don't know.
Yeah, so this is something I'd previously known about but forgotten and saw again when I was sort of looking at it. Yeah, he is uncredited. So I went through and I tried to sort of listen very carefully and see if I could pick out some bits and pieces. I think there might be some of the backing ad-libs which sound a bit like Shay. And then also on the vocal doubles for Jay on the second verse, they sound a little bit different to the ones on the first verse. The voice sounds a bit different. And it gave me the feeling that might have been Shay doing some of that as well, sort of layering some stuff in there.
Cool, cool.
But yes, I'd be very interested to actually, if anyone knows, you know, to find out exactly what Shay contributed in terms of the vocals and stuff on this track.
Yeah, I was trying to look for Pharrell interviews that he was talking about how the song was produced, how the song came up, and for the time that I had, all I found was Pharrell saying like he spent like maybe 3 days in the studio, like he was working his ass off, like trying to make a beat for Jay-Z. And when he got the inspiration to, I think he was inspired by Curtis Mayfield, not just on the vocals, but also for the beat and the vibe of the song. And he made it in 20 minutes. So he was like, oh, I spent like 2 days trying to came up with a beat. And when I got the idea, I made it in 20 minutes. Like, wow, that's insane. And then he came up with Give It To Me. Like, I just went along. Like, such a classic beat. Like, so cool. Yeah.
That's how it works sometimes.
And I was thinking about, like, if you think about all the singles that Jay-Z put out until that time, like, it was nothing like that. I mean, he got bangers. He got club songs. But I think this one is different. He got some R&B feel to it, the funky, of course, because of the beat and the instrumentals. But I think it's the first time, like, I don't know, I don't know how to describe it, like, in other word, but the word sexy always came up in my mind, and I don't think Jay-Z was trying to be sexy before that. And after that, like, he started to work with Pharrell even more, and he gave us like Excuse Me, because it's also like a funky R&B sexy song. So yeah, I think he is insane to think how Pharrell kind of gave other personas for rappers. He did the same thing to with Snoop, you know? So yeah.
Yeah, I think this is kind of, yeah, right place, right time. Obviously, you know, a lot of Jay's earlier stuff, you had, you know, Reasonable Doubt, which was obviously a lot darker.
Yeah.
As he became more popular, you know, some of the bigger tracks were, you know, with Timbaland, Swizz Beatz. But this was kind of, you know, fifth album. he's now been sort of, you know, pretty successful for a few years. They're living that kind of late 90s, early 2000s kind of party lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where the track comes from, really. And I did see a quote from Damon Dash, who was talking about it kind of at the time. And he even, I think, questioned Jay and said, like, should we be making this video? Like, are people just going to get sick of us seeing us partying and having fun all the time? And I think Jay's response was something like, no, we're not sick. How much fun are we having? We're not sick of having fun, are we? So other, nice. Yeah, that's what we're going to make. And other people shouldn't be sick of seeing us have fun.
Wow. What a lifestyle.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's cool because they are not lying, right? Like, they actually showing what they are living. And we know that is not the case with most of the rappers. Like, they mostly lying with ghostwriters, like saying they were drug dealers or selling stuff on the street, and they were never doing that. So yeah, it's pretty cool to know that that was actually how they were living.
Exactly, and that's kind of what I like to see in the kind of evolution of an artist, to sort of, you know, represent what it is you're actually going through at that time. Because obviously every successful artist has a period, you know, they had that early period where they were coming up and they didn't have much money, maybe. And so artists, you know, in the kind of hip hop genre and stuff, you know, were selling drugs. And obviously, you know, Jay has done this in the past. But they get to a point of their success where they don't need to do that. They can just party and have fun, make the music they want to make, make videos they want to make, waste all their money if they want to waste it on videos and booze and whatever else. So, yeah, if that's what they're actually doing day to day and with their weekends, then, yeah. So, you know, let's see it in the videos. Let's hear it in the music.
Yeah, nice.
What else did I have? I did see a quote from Britney Spears saying listening to this track is what inspired her to work with the Neptunes. And she obviously did a year later doing I'm a Slave for You, which is still one of my favorite Neptunes beats to date.
Oh, yeah. And he made that for Janet Jackson, right?
Originally, yeah.
Yeah. I think he said it was like, I think the song came out in 2000, 2001. And I think he said, like, he did the song like 2 or 3 years earlier. So, yeah. And I remember when I was still in Brazil, I was talking with some friends about the Neptunes, and everybody was saying, oh, Pharrell always give that his best stuff for white artists. And I was like, no, he tried to give to black artists. They refuse it.
They weren't interested things, at the time.
Justin's, like Britney stuff, like everything was for black artists. They refuse it. So, yeah.
Their loss.
Pretty crazy. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ah, and when the video came up, like, we see the classic shot on the stereo bumping, and yeah. The first thing that came in my mind was like, oh, maybe it was the same director that did Light Your Eyes on Fire, because it kind of has the same vibe, but it was not. I think you say like it was David Myers, right? The director. Yeah. And the director that did Light Your Eyes on Fire was Joseph Kahn. But I mean, all the videos look the same back in.
Exactly. They're all very similar. I think if you go back and look at, like, there are Hype Williams videos where he does the same thing with speakers, does like a close up of them, you know, vibrating and then the pullbacks. And yeah, I think a lot of them are doing similar things. As I said earlier, very much, you know, of its time.
Yeah, exactly. Do you remember the first time that you saw this video or heard the song?
No. As we were saying before we started recording, I can barely remember what I had for dinner yesterday, let alone when I first heard a song 24 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I cannot say exactly the time and where was I, but I pretty much know that I watch it on MTV, and in Brazil you have this program on MTV that is called Top 10 USA MTV USA. So they were basically showing like every music video that was bumping in the US. And I remember loving that show because it was mainly, especially in the 2000s, was mainly hip hop. It was not the case in Brazil. So I pretty much know that I saw the video in there. But I remember in Brazil was pretty common. People were selling like bootleg DVDs on the streets. And I remember like getting all these bootleg DVDs from hip hop videos. And I remember like, I think that video was like the number 4, and I was like repeating over and over again. But I remember just to listen to the music, actually. No, I was not really watching it. But yeah, good old days, man.
Yeah, I imagine I probably heard this on the radio at some point back in the days when we had radio and we had hip hop shows on Fridays and Saturday nights in the UK. Or, yeah, probably in a club back then. Yeah, we were going to certain bars and clubs that played a lot of, you know, the latest like hip hop music. So I would have heard it, you know, there somewhere, but I can't remember exactly where.
Yeah.
But I do remember being in certain bars and clubs and hearing it and stuff, though. So it was definitely around quite a lot, even in the UK.
Yeah. No, and when I think about this song in a club, I remember like in the 2000s when this song was huge. So I remember like people on the club singing to the part that Jay-Z said, "And get you bling like a Neptune sound." Everybody like, foo, foo. Everybody trying to imitate that noise. It was so funny because it was awful, but it was fun to see like everybody singing in that part.
I still do that to this day. If I hear that song or I see the video on, when it gets to that part, you got to do it. You got to do it.
Man, it's probably my favorite part of the song. It's so cool, man. So cool because I think it's the only song that is... That specifically sound, that it was a Neptune sound. Like I think it was the only song that highlight that part. Because I remember like in a lot of productions that they did in that era, it had a lot of those sounds in the back. But I think it's the first song that highlighted. It was like such a classic. Like I think for us Neptune's fans, like so good to hear that part.
Yeah, and I'd love to know like what came first, whether the sound being in the track or whether Jay-Z hearing all the different sounds that he would have heard in the studio that they're messing around with and tweaking and changing, whether he then incorporated it into the lyrics and they then added that in kind of over the top afterwards as well. Because that sound is used during the song, but it's not as prominent as it is at the end of that line. So it makes me think that, yeah, Jay has kind of heard those sounds being used, made the line up, and then they've gone, okay, now let's drop this in afterwards to really kind of tie it together. And it does what it works. It does work really, really well. Wow. It's the sort of thing that could come across as quite cheesy.
Yeah.
But it does really work.
Yeah, exactly. But I think we will never know, because you have to think like we are Neptune's fans, like diehard Neptune's fans. So I think for us, it will always be classic. It will always be amazing, but we don't know for the general public how it sounds or how it sounded back in the day.
Well, the day when Jay-Z comes on this podcast, he can tell us.
Oh yeah, and that's a good question to ask, like for them, like who came up with that line? How was the who came up with the idea? How was it?
And you know what the answer is going to be? I don't remember.
Yeah. I mean, it's a long time.
Because whenever I ask people like that have worked on some of these tracks, like in the early 2000s, questions about things like, oh, what's that vocal snippet from? Or what's that sample? Or how did you do that? They're always just like, I don't know. It's over 20 years ago and I haven't heard it in 15 years. So I've got no idea. Do not remember.
Yeah. It's crazy. Even Pharrell, like when I see like interviews from him nowadays, like every time that someone ask him about some music or some specific song from the 2000s, he always give like a generic answer. Ah, it was amazing. Like, you know, we get together in the studio, And it was the artist's idea, and we just vibe a little bit, and the song came up in 30 minutes, and okay, here we go.
Yeah. But I think what you also have to remember of that time is like, yeah, Chad is obviously very heavily involved as well. So there's always these situations where I can fully imagine they do the beat, Pharrell and Chad, or mainly Pharrell, whoever it might have been. One of them leaves, Pharrell leaves the studio, goes and does something else in another studio, or goes elsewhere. And Chad's left there to kind of mess around with stuff, and he's playing sounds and instruments. And maybe he just drops it in or plays a sound to Jay, and and then over time it just kind of the story gets lost. It's like, well, did the line come first, or was I playing something, or were you there? And there are so many people involved in sort of some of these tracks, and so many fingers on things that, yeah, I guess when you're a producer as well and you're making music and beats every single day, and you're recycling stuff and reusing stuff, it all just a lot of it just pretty blurs into one eventually.
I agree.
What I did notice, just looking to the side of me, I have an NERD poster just off to the side, a promotional poster for In Search Of, and there's the tagline on it, from the Neptunes, the production team. There's a light shining, I can't read it. The production team that bought you, and then this Jay-Z song is top of the list of a few lists out of around that time. But they call it on this poster, Give It To Me. They don't call it I Just Want to Love You, open brackets, Give It To Me, close brackets. So it's interesting because whenever I think I've spoken to people about this song, or they've spoken to me about it, they always call the song Give It To Me as well, because
Me
that's the
too.
one, the part of the hook that you remember. So I found it interesting that on the piece of marketing material, they didn't actually call the song its actual name. They called it by the bit that's in brackets at the end.
Exactly. I mean, like, most of people like that knew the song back in the day like should know the song as "Give It to Me" by Jay-Z, 100%. And it also easier to say.
Definitely.
Other thing that I have some memories with the song, and one of the memories that I have, I when I first saw the MTV Unplugged with Jay-Z. And I always like two things that I love about the I mean I love the live performance with the Roots, and I mean MTV Unplugged was a classic back in the day. But I remember like Jay-Z wearing the Che Guevara t-shirt with a lot of gold chains, and it's such a contrasted thing to wear, right? Like a Che Guevara t-shirt and gold chains, and was not just one but a lot of them. But if you think about it, when Pharrell came up to the stage to perform that song, he was also wearing like a skater t-shirt with some golden chains, and it was also kind of weird, you know, like that like skinny guy with looking like a skater with golden chains on his neck, like. So it was, I was thinking about it earlier today, like, wow, like those two guys, like wearing golden chains with such a specific t-shirts, like is giving a huge message. And that makes me think how Jay-Z was such a successful rapper since the beginning of his career, that we don't sometimes, I think he was also like a weirdo, you know? Like, you have to be, with that mind. And he was like writing all his songs on his head. And it's so easy to say, oh, Pharrell is a weirdo. He's a other person. He's different. But when you think about Jay-Z wearing that t-shirt with gold chains, you have to think like, oh, Jay-Z is also a weirdo for sure, as forever is, but different, of course.
Yeah, I think all of these massively talented people are special in their own ways. They all have their own kind of quirks and idiosyncrasies and weirdness, whatever you want to kind of call it.
And other memory that I had, that the first time that I saw Jay-Z was in London in 2017. It was in a festival. I think it was V Festival. I think V stands for Virgin, like the record label. And I was with the NRG trucker hat on the festival, and I was like in the middle of the middle of the people. Like everybody was enjoying the show, and when that song came up, everybody started to look at me like, "Oh, it's your song!" Well, just because I was wearing the hat, so nobody noticed the hat. But I mean, I think everybody was around me. Everybody noticed the hat, but nobody said anything. But when that song came out, like everybody, "Oh, it's your song, like you have to sing now." But oh, okay.
Expect you to sing it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I'm trying to think how many times I've seen Jay-Z live. That just reminded me of like me having gone and seen him live. I think I've seen him 3 times, maybe. Yeah, I saw the Watch the Throne tour.
Wow.
Of Kanye in London. He played Bournemouth, weirdly enough, once, as has Kanye as well.
Yeah.
My little seaside town that I'm from. And then I saw him in what was an epic show at the old Wembley Arena. Would have been, I don't remember the years, mid-2000s. I can't remember if I've talked about this on the podcast before or not, but yeah, Lupe Fiasco supported.
Wow.
And then Memphis Bleak was there for a lot of stuff. And then he bought out Beyonce because he just started dating her, or, you know, they just announced that they were dating officially. So she just magically appeared. And then it was the first time him and Nas were like together after like the big beef that they had.
Oh.
So he bought. So he was like, oh.
What year? 2005, 2006?
Yeah, I was about to say 2005-ish maybe, yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, I remember him saying, he like said to the crowd, like, oh, you know, there's been this stuff in hip hop and we've had this beef, and tonight's the night when, like, you know, we end the beef. And he brought Nas out. And like, I can imagine him doing that in New York or something where they're both from.
Yeah.
But he did it in London. He ended the whole beef and brought Nas out in London. And yeah, the place went crazy. It was a great, great show.
Wow, man. Amazing. Like, wow. I have no words. Just to see that happen, man. I remember the when Jay-Z said, I think it was in 2006 when he said, "Oh, Nas is going to be on my album." I was like, what is going on? And the only thing that I hate about them being friends now is because Jay-Z, I will never see Jay-Z perform Takeover. Is because such a good track, man. So good. And
but yeah. even after the beef, he was still doing it.
Really?
In live shows. Yeah, yeah. He would still do it sometimes.
Fucking asshole. I mean,
well, I guess if you've said to the person like, "It's over, but it's a popular song, so yeah, I still need to perform it."
It is such a good song.
I'm sure like Nas didn't just drop, you know, Ether and never perform it ever again after that night. I'm sure it still cropped up every now and again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just for a small crowd.
But yeah, I would love to I'd love to see Jay go back on tour one day. I don't know if he ever I get the feeling he probably never will. He doesn't need to do that sort of thing anymore. Yeah, obviously he turns up, does guest appearances at other people's shows and does kind of small private events where, you know, him and his good wife get paid, you know, millions and millions to do it for rich families. I don't ever really see him doing like a big tour ever again. Cause I feel like if he bought another album out now, it wouldn't be like, I'm trying to think what to say. It wouldn't be an album that you would do a massive tour with, like the last album. Like, it wasn't one that was packed full of hits and that you would want to go and really heavily promote and do loads of shows around and stuff like that. Yeah, you do the odd thing, but you wouldn't necessarily go on a world tour with it. And I get the feeling like, you know, the music he would potentially make it, you know, for himself now would be more along the lines of his last album. And when you're at the level of Jay-Z, it's like, one, you don't need the money, you don't need to tour, you don't need to be away from your family for weeks and months. And also, if you drop an album out of nowhere after X number of years of not having an album out, like, that's all the promotion it needs. It doesn't need you to go on tour to promote it. Like, you know, it's going to get reviews, it's going to get plays, it's going to get spins, it's going to, you know, maybe you go and do the odd interview with Apple Music or, you know, some other kind of high-profile presenter somewhere. That's all you really need to do now if you're at that level.
Yeah. I feel the same. And I feel like the only thing that will put Jay-Z on the road again, it would be if he, like, announced, like, oh, it's my, I don't know, going away tour. Like, it's my second retirement tour. So maybe that's
it. So my second Black Album.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just give a quick flex. I do have a signed copy of the Black Album sat behind me.
Oh, fuck off.
One of only 100 in the world. Just saying.
That's cool. Yeah, man. Like, and that was when I became a huge fan, like, of Jay, because he put out Black Album, and then he put out the movie, Fade to Black. And for me, oh, man, that movie, I think I watched that movie so many times. I think at least I watched the entire movie like 20 times, at least. And not even going to say the part that he's in the studio with Pharrell. Man, a million times I saw that.
It was one of the many DVDs in the collection that I had shipped over from the UK recently that I had to drive to Sweden to collect. There were, like, I don't know, 100 music video DVDs in there, and Fade to Black was one of them. So it's in a box now to go to the charity shop. But yeah, when I saw it, I was like, oh, I need to download that. I need a copy of it on my server so I can watch it again at some point. So yeah. I made sure I downloaded a copy. And now at some point I'll go and give it away to a charity shop somewhere so someone else can hopefully enjoy it if anyone out there still has a DVD player of any kind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, man. Like, I don't have the copy on me, but I wish I had, because it's not easy to find online anymore.
Send me a message. I've got a copy. You just send me a message anytime.
Okay. I mean, most of Jay-Z's stuff is not that easy to find online.
Well, yeah, he's had lots of things over the years where he's put stuff on platforms and removed them and then put them back and removed them again. And yeah, I think, like, Fade to Black itself isn't on any, like, streaming services or anything. It's one of those ones where he put it out there. It probably sold a ton of DVDs, and then they were just like, yeah, now just scrap it, get rid of it. And, you know, there's not really any need for him to put it out there on any platforms ever again.
And the way, and since we're talking about the DVD, the movie, it's so good. The part that Pharrell appears on the DVD is so good. The transition when they are in the studio and then when they start to perform, because it's exactly when Pharrell say, "Ho!" And they transition exactly at the same time on the live concert. Man, so good. I mean, the entire thing is amazing. But that part, like the specific part, is pretty cool.
I'm going to have to go and watch that again this weekend, because it's been quite a few years since I've seen it. But I know the bit you're talking about. So, yeah, I'm going to have to go give that a watch, I think, soon.
Yeah. So cool, man.
All right. Should we move on to some news?
Yeah, let's go.
Seeing as we've been talking for nearly an hour already. All right. I've got a few bits and pieces here, so we'll try and rattle through them reasonably quickly. It seems to be that on every episode we record, we talk about Pharrell's new musical that's in the works, loosely based on him growing up in Virginia, or the area that he grew up in. Last week we talked about how Missy Elliott was now attached to the project, and since then it's been confirmed Janelle Monáe is joining the production. Amongst various other people that were announced as well, but I think Janelle Monáe, the highest kind of profile out of all of those. Again, I didn't see specifically what her involvement is, but she is now attached to it, so it's quite the stellar cast that they are putting together for that one.
Yeah.
We have got some new Pharrell sneakers coming out.
Yeah, man.
I think it's the Samba SI, isn't it? Or SL, not SI.
Yeah, something like that.
I've got to say, the last Sambas that came out that were like a solid colour, I quite liked. These Sambas, I'm not feeling. I've got to say, I'm not a massive fan of the Samba anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Me too.
But I quite like the last one just because they were like real high, high quality leather. The colors were really nice on a couple of them. These ones, there's six different versions and they are all white. And again, I think they're a high quality leather version, but they're all just white. And then the only changes are the colors of the stripes and the heels, and I think partly on the soles as well. So there's a green version, a yellow one, a red one, a black one, a bluish purpley one, and then like an all white version as well. I won't be rushing out to buy any of these. I will keep my eyes peeled if they appear in any sales at some point in the future.
Same here.
But yeah, I won't be going out and spending, you know, 200 odd euros on a pair. But if you are a Samba fan, then those are dropping, I want to say next week. We're recording this on the 14th of May. I think they drop in the next couple of weeks or something. So they're out before the summer.
Yeah. No, it's the same formula, right? Like, let's use a silhouette of a shoe from Adidas and put a lot of colors, because this is the Pharrell thing, a lot of colors, and just put out, make some money, and that's it.
Yeah, but and that's the thing. Like, I don't mind like reworking an old silhouette, but these are just like, these aren't even colorful. Like I say, the colors are just on the stripes and on the heel tab. Apart from that, they're all white.
Yeah, exactly.
And I appreciate, you know, they're being made with like, you know, nice high quality leather and stuff like that. But they, you know, I think if I walked past a pair in the street, I would just think they're a normal pair of Sambas. I wouldn't, you know, look twice at them. I'd like to see a bit more innovation and interesting things being done with these. Like I say, the last pack that he did, that, you know, they had the solid color across the whole shoe, and a couple of those were quite nice. There was like the mauvey color and the purpley sort of one. They were decent, but yeah, these ones just look to me just like look like normal Sambas, and I'm not massively impressed.
Yeah, me too. Like I don't see what's the appealing with the Sambas. It's just, for me, it's like a simple sneaker, you know, so just not interesting there.
Yeah, but they're obviously, you know, that silhouette is having a resurgence at the moment, so you got to hop on whatever's popular, I guess, and shift a few more of them.
Yeah.
Speaking of shifting things, Pharrell has been shifting some cars recently via his Jupiter auction platform.
Oh, yeah,
I meant to mention this in the last podcast, and I completely forgot. The auction has since ended. It ended like last week, I think, or just before. But I think he was doing this in collaboration with Daniel Arsham, the artist that he works you know, kind of quite closely with previously. I did see Daniel at kind of a lot of the promotional events and in a lot of the promotional material. So I'm assuming he's heavily involved in this. And it was, I think, 12 or something, kind of classic sports cars, a lot of them from the sort of 80s, 90s periods. I did try to look at what they sold for, but a lot of that information is already kind of off of the website because the auction's over. But it looked like an interesting event. It's interesting to see what Pharrell and his team are doing with the kind of Jupiter platform that they've got.
Nice.
I have seen recently on LinkedIn they've been hiring like, you know, new marketing people, and there's a head of marketing, head of branding and stuff like that. So they really are kind of pushing this quite hard. So yeah, I'd be interested to see, you know, what other collaborations they do going forward.
But one question, like, it was Pharrell's cars that they were auctioning?
No, they weren't his cars.
Oh, okay.
No. They were just ones that have been kind of, you know, curated from obviously other collectors and stuff.
Because I always thought what Pharrell did with, remember the, I think it was a Rolls Royce that he was driving on Hot and Fun video, because the thing that they put on the car, it was like a whole Friends With You.
Yeah, like the decal they did, yeah, for it.
Yeah, and it looked pretty cool. But I don't remember, like, what car was it. And I always wonder, like, what he did with that car. Because since he put, like, he covered the entire car with the Friends With You, like, drawings and all the stuff, it looks pretty insane. But just to driving around with that car.
Yeah, that would have been. So it was a classic Rolls Royce they used. I can't remember the actual model. And then, yeah, Yeah, it's just a decal they've stuck on the car. And I imagine as soon as they finished filming, they peeled it all off and the car went back to the person or the company that owns it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I get it.
Yeah, I don't think it was his car or anything they customized specifically for him. It was just, for the video and that was it.
Nice. Okay.
Got more Pharrell jewelry. So we previously talked about him working with, Tiffany. He signed a partnership with them. He is now launching the Tiffany Titan collection. At the time of recording this, early access is available on the Tiffany website. There will be a link in the show notes. Like the Louis Vuitton stuff, it's, looks cool, looks amazing. Not anything I could ever wear, not anything I could ever really justify purchasing or being able to afford.
Yeah.
I think the cheapest piece there was a very small pair of earrings, women's earrings that were like 3,600 or something. And then the most expensive item was a gold chain, which was like 56,000 or something like that. So, not anything that's for me. But, if you are a Tiffany fan, if you are a jewelry fan, then the link will be in the show notes so you can go and check out the collection.
Mm. I have one question. So imagine if you had the money, if you were like filthy rich, what item from Pharrell, like one of the craziest items that he ever wore or he ever put out, what item you would purchase it?
I'd be buying all those chains back off of Drake, I think.
Yes, man. And I would do it better. Like, I will not buy it. I will hire someone to steal from Drake and maybe slap that guy on the face.
Oh, no. We're back to another Drake hate podcast. Oh, no.
Here we go.
Yeah, it's been an interesting few weeks for Drake, hasn't it? I think we briefly touched upon it on one of the last podcasts. Yeah, his back and forth with Kendrick has been entertaining.
Yes, it is.
It's been quite dark at times, very dark.
Yeah.
I know these beefs nowadays get kind of, they can get quite personal. We've seen that with Drake and Pusher in the past, mentioning kids and stuff like that. But Drake and Kendrick have kind of, upped it and gone to another level of personal. I think Drake posted something, didn't he, the other day on Instagram? I don't follow him anymore. So I saw someone else kind of repost it or talk about it saying that he said he was, done with it now and just wanted to chill or whatever. So let's see if the beef is over, if the diss tracks are over.
Oh, poor Drake, man. He lost another one, man. It's so cool to see, man. Wow.
And even just listening, I listened to all the tracks of the day because I'd heard like little snippets of them. So I think last weekend I sat there and downloaded all the Kendrick ones, all the Drake ones, and then listened to them kind of in order to get the kind of conversation correct. And even just like objectively, Kendrick just hammered him.
Yeah, man. Like, exactly. Like, I was talking with a friend of mine, and he's also Brazilian, and I told him, man, even if you're not with the lyrics in front of you, when you just listen to the song, you can feel it that Kendrick is doing better. You can feel it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I think mainly, I think Kendrick won this one mainly because Kendrick, the things that Drake said about Kendrick, Kendrick kind of already told us on previous songs in previous albums, and Drake hasn't. Drake has a lot of skeleton in his closet. And I think
everyone does to some extent.
Yeah.
A couple of bits that sort of stood out to me, I think made most of the headlines were, like you were just saying then, Drake talking about Kendrick being like molested or something. And he was like, here you said this. And then obviously other people go through and dissect all the lyrics. And they were like, no, Kendrick never actually said that. Like, that's not actually correct. It didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
And then also, obviously Kendrick had been talking about Drake's alleged preference for younger ladies, let's say.
Yeah.
And Drake kind of you know, just bought up, what's the actress's name?
Millie Bobby Brown.
That's it, yeah. She's from Bournemouth as well, actually, originally. There's a fun fact.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he bought her name into it when, again, like Kendrick hadn't even mentioned her. I think Drake thought he was maybe trying, he was being clever by getting it out there first, but it just sort of backfired on him, I felt.
is the classic scene on the movie when, oh, I heard you did something, and the people that is being accused mentions someone's name, and you're like, oh, I never said her name. So yeah, you got some pretty big or pretty young skeleton in your closet, Drake.
But then going the other way, though, there's also the, you know, Kendrick spent a large part of a song talking about a supposed other child that Drake has, a slightly older daughter.
Yeah.
To which, you know, Drake's reply was, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but his reply was, we actually made that up and we purposely got someone to tell you about it and we planted that information to see if you would use it, and you did, therefore you're stupid.
So silly, man.
It is. It's just, yeah, some of it is just so ridiculous.
It is.
But it, also, but it's interesting and humorous to watch.
But did you see the video that leaked it this week? Like, because Drake was saying, like, oh, we planted those evidence. And he was also talking about the drugs that Drake was taking, I think, for the BBL procedure that he got, and also the roofies that supposed like him and his team was using on the women. Pretty insane. And one guy, like, I think the guy working on the hotel, like, he saw Drake like putting some stuff on the garbage can, and the guy went there and took everything, and there was a lot of drugs and roofies on there. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. Let's get back to some happier news.
Yes.
Before it gets too dark. We talked last time about Despicable Me 4, which comes out this summer, I believe.
Yeah.
One of Pharrell's new tracks, Double Life, has a sort of 60-second preview on YouTube. There'll be a link in the show notes so you can go and watch or, you know, listen to it. It sounds like a Despicable Me track. It didn't sound like anything special. I won't pass judgment yet. I'll wait for the whole song to release and, you know, see what else is on the album to sort of get the context of it. But yeah, you can go and check that out. Something I noticed this week on LinkedIn, in fact. Someone that works with Pharrell that I sort of follow on there that, you know, works on projects with him posted a picture of him at his Atlantic Park venture. So this is an area in Virginia Beach called Atlantic Park. They're redeveloping. They're putting in this huge kind of public surfing pool, and there's going to be a new, I think, Virginia Beach's largest music venue. They're building new restaurants, office spaces, housing. Something like $400 million the overall investment is, and the overall cost of it. Wow. So there was an update there that, yeah, Pharrell was over there kind of overseeing or, you know, checking in on the project to see how it was going. I was kind of vaguely aware of this, but I hadn't really seen any details around it. So you can go check out their Instagram. They've got an Instagram page called Atlantic Park VB. And from there, you can get to their website, which tells you all about the development. And also on there, there's like a marketing deck that they've used to obviously get investment and to promote this and stuff. It was very interesting to kind of go through it and read it and see what their plans are and sort of see how they compare to other similar ventures like this. So be really interesting to see when it's done, kind of how it turns out.
Yeah, I haven't read it, but I saw the photos, how it's supposed to look when it's done. Pretty amazing, like some futuristic things. So cool.
Yeah, it does look amazing. It looks like an amazing space. It only takes up a couple of blocks, I think. I think it's at the north end of sort of Virginia Beach. But yeah, like I say, big wave pool for surfing, or two pools, I think it is. A big indoor-outdoor concert venue, a big kind of plaza with, you know, shopping experiences, office spaces, residential spaces, which look like they're going to be very expensive.
Yeah.
Even in the pitch deck, it says the cost of their own apartments they're building are going to be significantly higher, I think it said, than, you know, other buildings and apartments around that area. So they know they can cash in on this and make some real money.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how much they go for. But it looked like, yeah, an amazing area. And again, one of many ventures that he's involved in. He's involved in a like an office block, or, you know, residential slash office block in Toronto. He's obviously got the hotel and the restaurant in Miami. You know, lots of different bits and pieces going on at the moment. So they have broken ground. They will be building soon. So I imagine it's probably going to take a, you know, good couple of years for it to be finalized. I don't remember what the end dates were, but we'll keep track of that and see how that's going. And then the final piece of news we've got, this may make the edit or may not, depending on what gets announced, but some BBC news. The BBC EU store is closing down. As we are recording at the moment, which, as I said earlier, is the Tuesday the 14th. This hasn't been officially announced, but hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, it will have been. There has been like a kind of store sale happening since last Friday, I think it was, maybe last Friday or Saturday, and it goes to this Wednesday. So they are clearing out all of the stock that they have in the store itself. Because obviously nowadays, being owned by JD Sports, most of their stock is, you know, in a warehouse basically, because they get most of their orders from online or they go to third parties. But they of course keep some stock downstairs at the store for when people walk in and want to buy things. So all of that stuff is currently being sold off. By the time this podcast goes out, the sale will be over, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I didn't want to mention this any earlier, just because I don't want to get in trouble, let's say. By the time this comes out, it should have been, you know, announced. Yeah, I'd say it's not, it's sad. It's sad that there won't be like a store in London anymore, and
yeah, I mean,
there won't be like an official kind of, you know, flagship store in Europe. But I think it was inevitable after JD Sports bought them, and having looked at their accounts a number of weeks back that we briefly talked about on another podcast, you know, they were making barely any of their income from that store. And I imagine that store being in a prime part of London cost a small fortune to, you know, to rent and to, you know, keep it staffed and everything else. There's always, obviously, yeah, it's not cheap to kind of own and operate a store like that in central London. So yes, they are closing down. If you were lucky enough to get to the store sale over the last sort of few days, if you got anything, let us know. I was going to get a couple of bits, but yeah, everything was pretty much half price or less than half price. But there was nothing really that took my fancy, nothing really from the last kind of couple of seasons that they've got, you know, downstairs underneath the store that I really sort of fancied. So I didn't get anything in the end. But yeah, a real shame to see it closing. I guess the main sort of focal point for BBC EU will now be the installation they have at Selfridges, kind of just up the road. For those that don't know, if you're in the US, for example, Selfridges is a big kind of famous department store in London, with their sort of flagship store being on Oxford Street, the main sort of shopping street in London. And in there, they have a fairly sizable BBC installation. I guess that's now going to be the focal point.
Yeah,
I'm hoping it doesn't mean JD are going to start ramping up, putting more stuff in JD Sports or on the JD Sports website, but we will see.
Yeah. I recently saw that they are selling BBC on the store, they call it Size?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so they are selling a lot of stuff in there. And they also have a shop, a boutique in here from Spain that's called Si Vas Descalzo. And they are selling also BBC stuff for the last year and a half.
Yeah, so I think Size has had a BBC account for probably 4 or 5 years now, I think.
Oh, really?
So they've always had stuff at Size, yeah.
Nice.
It's been with them quite a while. But yeah, you know, that's where I think 80%, when I looked at the numbers, around 80% of BBC's income was coming from. It was coming from wholesale, from, you know, these third-party retailers that are, that have got accounts with them, that buy the stock off them and then go and sell them themselves. So that seems to be the way the business model is going now, 100%. Yeah. But like I say, I just hope JD Sports don't start diluting the brand by offering it in places that we wouldn't expect to see it.
Yeah. And I think the main thing is, like, let's hope that they don't lower the quality of the things, especially from the things that they are doing here in Europe. Because most of the things that they do here, like, the quality is super, super high.
Yeah, again, it's going to depend on those price points and what they can sell. Because obviously BBC EU is the luxury arm of BBC, which is why they have the higher quality materials, they have the higher price points. They've obviously got a lot of good relationships with the manufacturers out in China, where most of the stuff is made for them. Yeah, let's see. I think it's just going to depend on how well this business model works and whether JD Sports kind of think, well, actually, you know, like BBC in the US did years ago when they got sold to Iconics, you know, they decided they wanted BBC to be more accessible and at a lower price point. So they flooded every department store under the sun with BBC.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you could pick up T-shirts for, like, you know, $10 and $15 and stuff like that.
Dark times, man.
Yeah, and it really hurt the brand, and the brand is still coming back from that years and years later.
Yeah.
So let's hope that's something JD doesn't do over here. Let's hope they kind of keep it as a slightly more exclusive, higher quality item. Yeah, maybe, you know, we've seen the ice cream brand be relaunched in Europe a couple of years back now, and that's kind of at the lower price point. So let's hope they maybe focus on ice cream if they want to be in more places and at a lower price point and that sort of thing. And the BBC side gets left alone, but we will see.
Yeah, let's hope. Finger crossed.
Yes, but I will be sad, yeah, not being able to go to the BBC store on my yearly trips back to the UK. I will miss that this year.
Yeah, 100%.
So yes, if you've ever shopped at BBC EU, pour one out for them.
Exactly. I went to the store like twice, and the first time that I went, like, it was such a moment because it was my first time ever in a BBC store. So I was like, wow, I'm actually here. Like, I can't believe it. Seeing the pieces in my hand, you know? And then one year after, I went to the BBC in New York, and it was also a huge moment for me. And the only one that is missing now is the Tokyo one. They still have a Tokyo store?
Well, you got the Tokyo one, you got the Hong Kong one, you've got a few of them dotted around in Asia. Yeah.
Nice, cool.
Yes, still more to tick off on my list as well. But speaking of stores, we get to our final item I have on my list, and it's some shameless self-promotion, and that is an update to the Others merch and our store. Previously, we had an account with, what's the name of them? TeePublic, I think it is.
Yeah.
Where we could upload designs and they would basically put that on any piece of merch that you wanted, which was fine. You know, I've bought a few of the items and, you know, the quality was okay. What I decided recently, though, was I wanted to bring everything kind of under our own website and host it all ourselves. So we're now using a different partner called Printful, who do something similar, but they don't do that thing where I upload a logo and then that logo gets put on 100 different items. This is much more kind of curated. You have to kind of pick each item, design each item sort of specifically and individually. So we've put up an initial store with just, you know, some basic items such as T-shirts with different logo types, hoodies. There's some other basic items like stickers and mugs and things like that. If you would like to support the podcast, you can head over there and, you know, feel free to purchase something. It's theothers.net/store. If you go there and there's like some kind of item that you really want that isn't on there, then, like, you know, please reach out and let us know, because in the catalog of items that, you know, we can pick from and we can actually utilize and have delivered to people, there are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different things. I've already had a couple of people reach out and ask for certain items, one of which we've put on the website, one of which they don't offer at the moment, but they will soon. So, yeah, if you're after anything specific, then, you know, reach out and let us know. But if you go over there and you purchase anything, you know, it helps support the podcast. It sends a few euros our way. We make very, 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 very minimal money off of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a couple of euros here and there, basically. And, you know, it all helps. So, yeah, if you want to support the podcast, head over there and purchase something. That would be greatly, greatly appreciated. Even if it's just, you know, a fridge magnet or some stickers for a couple of euros, it all helps.
Yeah, and not just to support our podcast, but also if you purchase something from our shop, is going to make us just happy to imagine you having like a t-shirt or a mug or even a sticker with the logo of the podcast. Like, that would be amazing just to think about you having those items with the logo. So yes, feel free to check it out. And
I've got to say, when we were on the previous platform, I would get notifications whenever somebody bought something, and I was always completely blown away when I got a notification saying someone has bought one of your t-shirts or someone has bought one of your hoodies.
Yeah.
Because it was on another platform, I never knew who those people were.
Yeah.
So a massive thank you to those of you out there that are listening that did buy things. It's always a very weird feeling, at least for me. Yeah, Rafa sells his own work and stuff like that, so he's a bit more used to it. But for me to see people buying stuff related to the podcast, where it's just, you know, this idiot rambling on for an hour and having great people on here to support me, it's yeah, I always find it, yeah, mind-blowing.
Nice, yeah, it is. It's an awesome feeling.
All right, that's everything I had this week. Anything else from yourself?
No, that's it. We had enough of Pharrell and Neptunes, man.
We could never have enough.
Yeah. I still want them to get together again and make music, maybe some live performance. I don't know. Yeah. Anything.
Yeah. Let's all cross our fingers and toes and pray to whichever God it is you like to pray to, if there is one that you like to pray to.
Yeah.
You never know what may happen. But yeah, we'll wrap it up for there for this week. You can find the show notes and everything else both in the podcast player of your choice normally, but also over on the website, theothers.net. You can find all of the online links at linktree/otherspodcast. You can find me online at Steve R. Penny. And Rafa, where can everybody find yourself?
You can find me also on Instagram at @Rafito_Zurk. And also you can find my work. I do sneaker illustrations and I sell posters. So if you want to check it out, you can find me on @sneak.art.el.
Lovely. And the links will be in the show notes as always. But yes, thank you everyone for listening. And we will catch you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.